that's right, boys and girls. Welcome to the first ever episode of Mr. Rogers' Zombie Neighborhood. That's right, boys and girls. We're all zombies all the time here in the neighborhood. I'm Mr. Rogers, your host, and if you don't believe that, check my birth certificate. I got my co-host here, Beth LaFond. Beth, tell everybody out there in internet land hello.
Hello.
Yeah, let me tell you a little bit about myself, just so you got an understanding of where I'm coming from. I'm a father to a beautiful little 18-month-old daughter named MJ. I'm a husband of a beautiful and supporting wife who can't stand horror but puts up with my insanity. Most importantly, I'm an author and a poet. My credits go all the way back to a now-defunct magazine named Horror in Words, where I had a poem published called It Comes. Then I had a micro-flash fiction magazine publishing of Point Bluff, a short story. Letters from the Dead from the Library of the Living Dead Press. I had number 11 letter published. And then finally, and most importantly, is the first novel in the trilogy of the undead, Faith in the Undead. One of the things I wanted to talk to you all about here first, too, is things coming up in future shows. We're going to do some interviews with all types of people, from Dr. Puss from the Library of the Living Dead all the way down to Zebediah Zombie.
Hey, me?
Yes, you. Go terrorize a squirrel.
Squirrel.
I'm going to be doing some readings of works by up-and-coming authors. We got a holiday episode coming up in December that you do not want to miss. One of the features we're going to do is a zombie hunting weapon of the episode. I'm going to read a little bit of my own works. Poetry from Beyond the Mist by Beth LaFond. And the Pimp Tip of the Week by artists, poets, and authors. Now let's get started here. We got the zombie hunting weapon of the podcast. I get to pick out this weapon, and this episode's weapon is a .22 caliber rifle with scope. Beth, what do you think about the .22 rifle? Is that a good zombie hunting weapon?
Well, it is if you know how to use a gun.
Oh, they're not hard. There's a safety switch, and then there's a trigger. You just kind of look down that long scope, put the crosshairs on your target, take a deep breath, exhale partway, and just stroke that trigger, and that round's going downrange. Turn that zombie's head into an exploding watermelon. Stay tuned, though, folks, because episode number 2's weapon of the podcast, the machete. Now I want to give this over to Beth for a little bit about a Horror Hound recap. We did do Horror Hound down in Cincinnati recently with Dr. Puss and Patrick D'Azio from the Library of the Living Dead Press. Beth, tell them about Horror Hound.
There's a lot to tell you about Horror Hound. The people were wonderful. Sales were great, absolutely great. In this day's economy, we sold 15 books in three days. And for us, that's absolutely amazing. Met some awesome people, everybody from the original Damien from the 1976 movie, Omen, all the way up to Linda Blair from The Exorcist, and just absolutely wonderful people to spend time and talk to.
Well, don't forget Julian Sands and Malcolm McDowell. We can't forget those two. Those were incredible people to get to talk with.
Oh, Julian is a true gentleman. He goes above and beyond being kind to everybody. We also met up with a band called Mushroom Head, who's been around for 17 years.
That's a long time to be playing music in today's day and age.
Well, they are still very young. They started as a garage band, you know. Back in the school day.
I don't remember those days. So, we got this story, and I'm still trying to get the scoop out of everybody on this. But evidently, Jeffrey Combs decided to start calling Rich Dalzotto and Dr. Puss, Puss and Wretch. Now, as things go on and I get more scoop, I'm going to share those with you. What did we learn down at Horror Hound, Beth?
Well, we learned table placement is everything. It depends exactly where you are. And it's not hard to stand up and say, hey, I paid for this table. Can we be somewhere in a different area. Horror Hound staff was wonderful to work with. We weren't stuck in a corner, and we actually got along very well with our vendors that were next to us.
Well, the nice thing is, too, is that now we're set up because we're going in March 25th, 26th, and 27th, I do believe, to Indianapolis, Indiana, to do the Horror Hound over there, and they've already released some of the clowns. The clowns, yeah. There's actually a Killer Clowns from Outer Space reunion. I got that on the brain. And then the Boondock Saints are coming in, Sean Patrick Flannery, Norman Reedus, and David DeLaRocco, and then also Dario Argento is coming. Oh my God, I know Dr. Puss is already going to go fanboy when he sees Dario Argento.
I'm going fanboy over the Boondock Saints boys being there. That is an awesome movie.
Well, there's a lot of complaints going on right now that, you know, they're not really a horror thing. But let me tell you, Norman Reedus, he's in The Walking Dead. Sean Patrick Flannery, while it was a terrible movie, did play Powder. And, well, Rocco's just damn funny. That's just all there is about it. And we're going to shift gears here a little bit for a little reading. And this is Poetry from Beyond the Mist, read by Beth. And the name of this poem is called Brothers.
Twins born, moments apart. Feathered wings, dark and light. Angelic boys turn men. Born first, strength and love. Second comes glory and hope. Power feared and awed. Dark wings woven with gray. Oldest one, anonymous in light. Beloved spy undetected. White wings woven with gold. Younger still, innocent protector. His name revered. Evil fears, darkness and shadows. Good shines, generals of life. Bonded by blood, everlasting.
Well, let me tell you, folks, if you guys like Beth's poetry, stay tuned, because the big announcement we got for this first episode is Beth has a book of poetry coming out. It should be ready by Horror Hound in Indy, which is in late March, and it's going to be called Poetry from Beyond the Mist. And that'll be put out by the Library of the Living Dead and one of its imprints. Hey, Beth, do you hear that sound?
No, what?
Oh, here comes the Undead Express with our zombie joke of the episode. Hey, Beth, how many zombies does it take to change a light bulb?
I don't know. How many zombies does it take to change a light bulb?
None. They prefer to feast on your flesh by the glow of fear in your eyes. All right, let's move on here a little bit, and we're going to shift over to the pimp tip of the week, which is business cards. And I'm going to let Beth explain all this.
Business cards are a wonderful opportunity to get your name out there. A fan may not be able to pay for your book right away, so your business card should always have your name, your website if you have one, possibly a Facebook contact if you don't have a website, along with any other information you'd like for them to have. Now, I know my cards and Ben's cards are both the same. They have our name. They have our title of what type of horror novelist or poet we are. And we also have our website on there as well as our email. They're a great tool to hand out to also to prospective other talent that you might be hooking up with.
Yeah, folks, you hear us stumbling here. This is our first ever podcast, and we have absolutely no clue what we're doing right now. So just bear with us and let us smooth things out as we go along. Now let's go ahead and move on to the first reading. I'm actually going to shift voices here to my actual voice. I'm going to be doing a reading of one of my short stories. The short story is called 10 Years Ago by Benjamin Rogers. It was 10 years ago, son, that I caused all this, the tall middle-aged man told the little boy standing next to him on the grassy hillock. They looked down over the small town, taking in the gingerbread-adorned homes lined up down parallel streets that created out the hamlet of Oakbrook. The population at one time had run up on 5,000, but since the event, it had dropped significantly, and the man had lived with that guilt all these years. What would have been neatly pruned lawns 10 years ago had been replaced with rows of vegetables that now provided much of the sustenance needed by the population. One former yard was growing the neighborhood's pepper plants. Nearly an entire block of yards handled the corn needs.
and another series of homes grew all the tomatoes used by the town. This pattern continued over the populated portion of the small hamlet. Carts and wagons had replaced cars and trucks. The local high school now smelled of manure, not because of a freshly fertilized football field, but because it now held the town's livestock supply, corralled off by their types. Pigs were around the 20-yard line, cattle at the other end of the field, and chickens now occupied what were once the locker rooms. The man knew they had recovered well, and he had led them a long way out of the darkness, but he still couldn't get over the fact that a simple mistake had done all this. It was a simple project he was working on. Simply trying to improve his ride up to work was all that he wanted, but it just didn't work out that way. Now he had to explain to his son how this had come about, and how important his role would be in the future. "Son, I'm so sorry about all of this. If I hadn't been so selfish and done things the right way, we wouldn't be in this mess." The morning drive out on the freeway had always been quiet. There was no heavy traffic, no slow cars, no bad drivers. However, once he reached the freeway to head downtown, the problems began. The proverbial gridlock would inevitably set in, and he would be stuck in traffic. When traffic was like this, he didn't mind having the women putting on their makeup or another man shaving in the car beside him. What really got to him, though, were the people who cranked up their car stereos louder than the human ear could handle. The vibrations of the bass would rattle his car windows and his fillings in his mouth. If he didn't have a headache when he woke up, he had one when he got to work. This had gone on for many years and made his dentist a pretty penny over that time. 11 years ago was the worst experience he'd ever had. The cars in front, behind, and on each side had their stereos blasting. The only way it could have been louder was if he was actually at the concert, sitting in front of the 2-story stack of speakers that adorned the stage at any other show he'd ever been to. Over a cold beer that night on the back patio, the insane idea had come to him. What would happen if he knocked out the electrical systems on those cars? He knew the police had something like this to handle street racers, but he was pretty sure that it was illegal for him to own that piece of equipment. What he needed to do was come up with his own version to handle those road idiots. He grabbed one of his wife's little lined yellow notepads and began sketching out his beer-fueled ideas on his piece of paper. Cars got sketched out like little rectangles on the paper surrounding his car. Now all he needed to figure out was how to kill their electrical systems. It wasn't until a week later when he was reading a novel about the electromagnetic pulses that got issued during a nuclear explosion. Afterwards, nothing electrical or electronic could work, which was everything anymore. Vehicles were run by computers. All the lighting and power was distributed by computers. All the medical equipment was run by electricity. He knew if he could deliver something like that to a small location, he could take those cars out. Knock out the computers in the cars and no more stereos. It wasn't a complicated idea, but he knew that it would take some research to pull it off. Months later, he could successfully destroy a radio within 5 feet of his makeshift pulse. He sacrificed many cheap devices in the name of the test, and he knew he could successfully pull it off. This was going to work. The man knew he would have his vengeance. Now the final question was whether he could deliver the pulse or not. Once again, genius was spawned by a few beers as he sat in the living room having a couple and watching some TV. A commercial came on for a local hobby shop hawking their model kits and remote control cars. With that commercial, he knew how he would deliver the pulse to a vehicle a distance away. The next day, he drove down the road to the hobby shop and picked up some supplies for his contraption. At home, he opened the large box from his purchase and took out the chassis of a remote control car. He hooked up a battery to the stock chassis and tested the remote control to see if the car responded. With a zip and a turn, he drove the car right into the kitchen, spun it around, and drove it back into the living room. He took the car to his workbench and began to strip all the extra weight off of it he could. In its place, he began to mount his little pulse maker. All it had to do was stay low under another vehicle of his choice and trigger the pulse. Pulling his car in the garage, he mounted a small electromagnet that would hold his little toy aloft with plenty of ground clearance. Almost like a James Bond movie, he could push a hidden button in the glove box and the car would drop off to the ground. He could then steer the remote control car, position it under his target, and hit the button to transmit a signal releasing the final pulse. Monday provided his best target and chance to test the device. In traffic that morning, the usual happened, and a Honda Accord pulled up next to him with the windows over-tinted and one of those stupid mufflers on it. As traffic came to a standstill near the next exit, the boom, boom, boom of music began to drift in the air. As the man's neighbor turned up the music, the windows of his car began to rattle and held the potential to knock another filling loose. It was now or never. Reaching over and clicking the button in the glove box, he could faintly hear the remote control vehicle drop to the ground. He grabbed the remote and steered the car to the left underneath the Accord and let it sit. He took a deep breath and pressed the red button on the remote to trigger the EMP. The music stopped abruptly, the vibration in his mouth and windows gone. There was only one problem. The pulse turned out to be much bigger than it had been in the garage. Looking down the road, he saw the taillights of the vehicles he followed shut down. It was like the pulse was using the vehicles to build strength and spread down the road. People stepped from their dead vehicles trying to understand what had happened, grasping their cell phones to try and call loved ones, but to no avail. The pulse had wiped out everything. The electric traffic signs over the road, all the vehicles, and finally a traffic helicopter that had been over the area reporting on the congestion. The pulse had continued to reach upward and outward, reaching out, finally, to the rotor-driven aircraft. It spun out of control as the pilot tried to perform a maneuver called autogyration, where the momentum of the helicopter is used to keep the rotors moving so it can land. It didn't work. A large fireball tinged with gray smoke shot from the neighboring field as the helicopter crashed to the ground. And that's what happened. All I wanted to do was stop some loud music. In the end, I probably killed millions, son. I'm a disgrace now, and you will have to bear the burden of your father's shame as you grow up. Your father has killed more people than anyone in history. And now onto a lighter note, folks. It's now time for 101 things that you didn't know about zombies. This is going to be an episode of feature, and this is going to be item number one. Item one is, zombies don't need deodorant. Come on, they really don't have a use for it. They're dead. Heck, most of them have lost their noses anyways, and zombies don't need to breathe. What's a little BO amongst the undead?
Well, it's certainly one way to know when they're coming.
Sometimes it's about the only way, unless they start that moaning stuff again. Yeah, that's hearing them or smelling them, that's about it, isn't it? All right, folks, we're going to move on to another reading here, and I'm going to go ahead and drop back into my reading voice again because it's just oh so pretty. I'm going to be reading a story from one of my dear friends who's over in Ireland. He happens to be my cover artist, and his name is David Naughton Shires, and I'm going to be reading his story, When the Black Bear Attacks. All he could think of was a documentary on the Discovery Channel he had watched a few weeks ago, When the Black Bear Attacks. Those who had survived, and there were not many, had all agreed the one thing they remembered the most was the strong smell of rotting meat. As the huge creatures lunged at them and their powerful jaws came nearer, the weeks of undigested flesh that clung to the sharp teeth positively accosted their nasal passages. He giggled. Anyone looking on may have thought he'd lost his mind laughing at a moment like this, and to be honest, he probably had. He remembered many things in those few brief moments. Perhaps it was true. Perhaps your life did flash before your eyes as you started that final journey. If it did, it was amazingly bad timing, and God had obviously made a mistake creating that jewel of an idea, taking his mind off survival to take a sunlight stroll down memory lane. But if you only remembered the good things, it wouldn't be a long walk. He had been born in a small village to Sam and Liz. His dad had been the local policeman and Liz a school teacher in the primary school that occupied one of the few buildings that was larger than a house. The highlight of the weekend was when he and his friends, known as the Benchers because of their habit of haunting the one public bench in the village, would hop on a bus and go into the local metropolis to sit on a different, but very similar bench and whistle at the girls walking by. He felt a wet drip fall onto his forehead, but of course couldn't wipe it off. That wouldn't be wise at all. His mind left his current predicament and shot off at a ridiculous tangent. This time he was walking in the rain along a pebble beach, and the gray seas were crashing up against the shore. He was wrapped in a soft woolen scarf to protect him from the harsh weather. His mouth just cleared the material enough for his breath to escape and swirl like playing dragons in the crisp winter air. He loved it as a young child when at school they would run around in the playground, their jackets tied around their shoulders, flapping their arms like long leather wings as they dipped and dived through the air, their hot breath creating fiery smoke as it bellowed out of their mouths into the winter skies. In his gloved hand, he held another small, delicate gloved hand, warm and comfortable in his grip. The hand sat perfectly at the end of an arm encased in a thick winter coat, and was connected to the slender but strong form of Carrie. Carrie's thick, long hair blew in the wind and rain that filled this particular memory, her red curls glowing against the gray of the day. He knew where this was. This was the day they became official. And once again a smile broke across his face as he thought of how his children now said that official, to be truly official, had to be FBO. It took a while before they would share this meant Facebook official. FBO was that time in a relationship where you were confident enough to share it with the world. The memory of the beach was broken by yet another drop landing in the small concave area where his eye met the bridge of his nose. He now knew, no matter how hard he fought, there was no escape. Damn his good eyes, if only he was short or long-sighted and had to wear correctional lenses, he may have been safe. Smirking, he knew that even if he did have to wear correctional lenses, his own vanity would have made him wear contact lenses, so it really wouldn't have made no difference. The pain that started to appear across his shoulders was a sharp stabbing one that foretold cramps. He had been holding his arm rigid for what seemed like an age, and he didn't know how long he could manage it. He asked himself how much longer he could fight, how much longer he would struggle in this battle that was part of a war he had already lost. Taking a deep breath and closing his eyes, he saw the faces of his two children and heard their laughter as he let his arms drop and almost welcomed the weight that fell onto him. He felt no pain as the creature sunk its yellow teeth into the flesh of his neck, and in one powerful bite and tear, ending the fight, battle, and war all in one. And that was When the Black Bear Attacks by David Naughton Shires. Well, I got to do a little pimpage here because there's one man out there that without him, I would have never gotten my novel published. And that's this crazy little dentist I know down in West Virginia. Sometimes I get to call him by his first name. Usually I just call him Doc. And that's Dr. Puss. Dr. Puss is a zombie junkie. Not only is he a zombie junkie, he truly is a horror junkie. And that's H-O-R-R-O-R. I'm sorry, I have a bit of an accent. But Dr. Puss runs one of the coolest groups ever, folks, and that's the Library of the Living Dead. And they put out books. And when I say they put out books, they've got 55 books in print with more to come. I'm under contract for 3 more. Beth LaFon sitting next to me, she's under contract for her first book, a collection of poetry, folks. Now, I promised myself that when I did this, I'd always mention one of the novelists and one of his books. And today, I'm going to talk about Stephen North. Considering I just read a story about bears, I got to talk about Stephen North. Because Stephen North, good God, man, you're huge. Not just in the writing world, but you are a big, big man. I do not let Stephen hug me, for I am afraid I will disappear. Now, Stephen's got a book out there called Dead Tide. I'll throw in a little bonus and say the sequel's out too, which is Dead Tide Rising. Never have I met an author that can do more with a series of characters than Stephen North. His management of their roles in the book is incredible.
And just to share a little secret by the hand signs that I was just being thrown by Beth over here, I understand Stephen is working on the third book in the series, which I cannot wait for. So how do you find out about the Library of the Living Dead? Well, you go to the website, thelibraryofthelivingdead.com. Get it? www.thelibraryofthelivingdead.com. And now, what about me? Where are you going to find me? Where are you going to find your favorite podcast host? Well, you're going to find Benjamin Rogers on Facebook under Benjamin Rogers or Benjamin Rogers-author. And on Twitter, I'm at, you know, that's shift 2 on the keyboard. That's that little thing that goes in an email address. Yeah. I am at Undead Trilogy on Twitter. My email is Undead Trilogy, the at symbol again, gmail.com. Most importantly, where are you going to find out about me? Where are you going to see some of my readings? Where are you going to find out news about book 2 of the Trilogy of the Undead, Crusades and the Undead? Well, you're going to find that on my website. And that's 3 W's in a row. That's www.BenjaminCRogers.com. And don't add no stinking D to the Rogers. It's Rogers. All right, folks. For a first podcast, I'm running right on 30 minutes, so I'm going to go ahead and call it a show here and say thank you for joining us for the first ever Mr. Rogers Zombie Neighborhood. We're going to be doing this bi-weekly, so in 2 weeks, we hope to have another episode put together. And hopefully we get a little bit better at this production and reading thing. Y'all have a good night, stay scared, and thanks for listening to Mr. Rogers' Zombie Neighborhood.